than nothing.
All right, so that little box says we're live, and this is another very special episode of Squad Cobbler. I'm Mike at Official Pagan on everything, even Snapchat, so calm down. Joining me as always.
Hi, everybody. I'm Kelly Toole at KellyThul on Twitter.
Now, Kelly, we're here for a very special reason tonight. As the squaddies know, we've been alternating our regular recommendation podcast with podcast reviewing every Alice Cooper record, from the Alice Cooper group up through the solo records, doing all the studio albums in order. But something really cool happened while we set out on this project, and that's there's a brand new Alice record. So even though we're kind of doing these in order, we decided to break order a little bit just because we wanted this to be timely. It's awesome that this came out while we were kind of taking on this big project. What are your thoughts on it with a new Alice record coming out? Did it make you more excited about it that we were doing this?
I was certainly excited to talk about it. So it was, and particularly given what I experienced in listening to this album, because spoiler alert, I really, really like this album. And it was all of a sudden like, great. And now I've got a forum where you and I can sit. And I was very interested in wanting to hear kind of your thoughts on it as well, because he said, I went through this, like, wow, I'm in love with this thing. There's a lot of stuff I really, really enjoy about this album, and excited. I didn't want to have to wait the way things are working with timing. The paranormal review would occur, I don't know, sometime in 2018 if we just went with regular things. So I'm glad we're jumping on it now, because it's happening now. It's out there. It gives us a great opportunity to encourage people to go out and get it now. So I'm very excited to talk about it.
Yeah, we're kind of breaking form a little bit here, but you hit on something that's really important. For the people who don't know, you know, we record these in advance, so it'd be a couple of months before it came out. This album's still new. We wanted to do it while it was fresh, because we're really excited about this whole process, and this gives us an opportunity to do one of these for a brand new album while it's still fresh, and you guys can kind of listen to it with us, because it's brand new for all of us.
If our reaction to when we did Paranoid Personality, our famous 30 minutes about a 4-minute song, that got a lot of traction on YouTube, a lot of interest in that. So I'm hopeful that this follows suit, because I think there are a lot of people who are pretty passionate about Alice, and some of those people have connected with us as we've been doing it. So it's going to be fun to kind of hear the interactions, the comments, see if some of our regulars who kind of weigh in on certain things agree or disagree with what Mike and I are saying. So excited to get after it.
Well, right off the bat, you kind of hit on something pretty interesting there, which is there is sort of a lot of anticipation, it seemed, for this record online. And I mean, obviously, you can attribute that to Alice having such a long, storied career. But I think part of that, too, is this record has really been aggressively marketed, especially online, in a way that we really didn't see the last few Alice records done.
No, not even Along Came a Spider, which did have some supporting video elements to it. And there seemed to be some interest in it. But you didn't see the level of support from the record label that you're seeing for this one. In a lot of
Which
different
really
fronts.
Interesting, because you would think like an Alice Cooper record, like there's a built-in audience for this. And I think, unfortunately, you and I would see that as we got to go out and push this record because we know the people are out there for it. I think maybe on the last couple records, the labels saw it as we can just put this out and we're going to sell X number of copies because of the loyal fan base. So we don't need to push the record. It'll sell itself to a certain degree just being an Alice Cooper record. So it's awesome to see a label really take the initiative and really push the album.
Yeah, and again, surprising, because not only was there Along Came a Spider, but well, you know, the sequel to Welcome to My Nightmare came out, you know, in the not so distant past as well, which you would have thought would have been another one that you'd be tapping into longtime Alice Cooper fans and see, you know, doing a sequel to one of his more well known albums, you would have thought would have garnered a little bit more support. But it didn't, but this one did, and so I'm happy for that.
Yeah, and I'm glad it did, because like you, again, quick little spoiler alert, I love this album.
Yeah, it was, as I kind of went track by track, basically, so I will go through and do some contrast between which songs on this album I like better than the other, but I like every song on this album. There isn't a song on this album that I dislike or am not a big fan of at all. I enjoy them all. There's some that I just really love. And then it's like, because those all move to the top, there's a couple that'll eventually end up as this is the back of the list, but the back of the list on this album is still some pretty great stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it's still, you know, it's still so fresh, but I'm not sure there's really skips on this album.
Not for me. Not at all. There's some repeats that I'll just go back and say, you know what? I'm going to listen to that song again before I move on.
Yeah, absolutely. So before we get into the individual tracks, do you want to touch on the packaging and artwork a little bit? You and I have already, in our individual single track review, we already kind of touched on the fact that we're not huge fans of the cover. I personally have a digital copy of the album at the moment. I intend on purchasing the vinyl as well. I'm pretty much at the point where I get everything digitally, and if I love it, like I love this, or if it's something like Alice Wood, I'd buy a physical copy anyway. I personally just go straight for the vinyl. I skip CD entirely. But you purchased a CD of this, correct?
I did, because I'm old and I still like to have the physical copy just as like my ultimate backup. So if all my electronic mechanisms for some reason fail, that I still always got that physical copy that I can go recreate it again very easily. And plus I'm a packaging fan. So this one here, it is a two CD set. What we're going to do is, because we're probably going to talk at length anyway, but if we talked about everything, both CDs on this one, we'd have a massively long show. So we're going to break it up into two. This show, we're going to talk about the main Paranormal CD, the Alice Solo Paranormal, and then the next one we'll talk about the additional tracks with the original band and some live songs as well. And so the packaging accommodates your two CD set. It's got the very kind of cool stylistic Alice Cooper scrawl in red and black, kind of dripping paint, Paranormal on those types of things. Some good kind of spooky imagery and we'll talk about a little bit more about some of the web stuff that's out there to support this. A lot of the backgrounds, the kind of gray, shadowy backgrounds you see in the video support that's out there for the singles is heavily prevalent in it. And then there's a little booklet that continues on with some more of the kind of the photo shoot from that Mike and I are super excited about for Paranormal in terms of the cover and all the lyrics again there. So no little clever surprises that you get sometimes with some other little additions to the packaging, but pretty decent. You get the full set of lyrics, you get a nice little booklet with it and the CDs.
Now that's cool that it includes the lyrics. Are you a fan of albums that include the lyrics?
I am. I always prefer it. And it was always a great struggle being a big Clash fan as well. They, with great pride, did not include their lyrics for a very long time in their albums, which is remarkably unfair because Joe Strummer is not known for his enunciation. And so it'd be a little difficult sometime to understand. So what exactly is that being said in that Clash song? And then it wasn't until Sandinista that they actually included lyrics to their songs. And I was much appreciative that I could finally break down what Mr. Strummer was singing.
Yeah, I personally, I'm typically a big fan of it. It can get a little weird here and there, and I understand why some artists might be resistant to it. I've noticed there are songs that I love that sometimes when you read them out of the context of the music, the lyrics seem a little odd or like a little awkward reading them. Songs that sound amazing and brilliant in the context of the music. So I could see an artist being resistant to it sometimes, but I'm glad when it's included. I love packaging. I love pouring over the liner notes to things. I even read all the thank yous typically that are included with an album. So I love the packaging. I love it when artists include lyrics.
I don't, on the first listen, typically pull it out and just kind of follow line by line, but it is nice to kind of have as a fallback. And on this one, it was nice because there's a song that comes up where Alice does what he does from time to time, where he does some callbacks to other songs. And I was picking up most of them, but I wanted to make sure I was getting all of them. So I went to the lyric sheet and said, oh, okay, good. I got most of them.
Very nice. Yeah, so I'm glad we're on the same page so far, but here's where the real test is. We're going to go track by track through this and really break this thing down. So you ready?
I am ready.
All right, so we're going to start with, well, it was the second single or the second track released online off of it, the opening track, the title track of the album, Paranormal. What's your initial reaction to this when you put the album on?
So it was weird because we had a chance to become very familiar with both Paranoid Personality and Paranormal. And I liked Paranormal when it came out and the supporting material that went out for it. And I just ended up actually liking it better when it was done in context. As kicking this album off, even though this is not a thematic album, this isn't a storyline album, just it seemed like the right intro into this. And I liked just that combination of, I don't want to call it a softer delivery, but there was, you know, the Alice snarl, and it just built, the song itself built. And I can completely, although there are just so many songs on here that they could have gone out early with. This is a good song. It's a title track. It is, you know, intriguing that it's a title track where the word paranormal never appears in the lyrics, which is perfectly okay with me, but just kind of a different thing. I thought it set the right tone to begin the album.
I absolutely agree. First off, I'm going to get off a little bit of a tangent right away. You hit on something that's really interesting to me that happened to me later with Paranoid Personality. I really liked Paranoid Personality from anyone who's listened to our half-hour review of the three-minute song, but I like it a lot better in the context of the album. So it was interesting you said for you, that was this one that worked better in the context of the album. Great opening to the song, great build-up. Both of us, I think I can speak for both of us on this, we both prefer Alice's vocal style to have the classic Alice snarl doing that. My second favorite thing is when he goes for more of an eerie atmosphere with his songs. This has both. So for me, this was a great track to kick things off with.
Just some great kind of profound music in it. Just the swings between the tempo and the power of the song, and then kind of pulling it back into a little more kind of surreal kind of sound. It was a fantastic way to start the album off.
Absolutely. And you hit on something else that was interesting. The fact that they don't say paranormal in the song. You know, nowadays, I think especially with streaming music, people really more and more, it's always been, you know, people get hooked by the chorus of a song. But I think more and more like traditional song structures that we've reverted back to a single based album release system where people don't really consume albums as one large piece of work anymore, but rather the individual tracks. The choruses to these songs are so important. So they're not brand it, I think, is a really bold move. And it kind of reminded me of when Guns N' Roses put out their album Chinese Democracy. The first track they released off that was the title track of the album, which basically doesn't even have a chorus. It has like a bridge build up to a chorus, and then the chorus never happens. You go through a long intro, the first verse, which builds and builds and builds, then just goes into the second verse, which you think initially is like a stylistic thing just to unleash the chorus after the second verse, and it doesn't happen again. And just goes into this crazy long guitar solo. So it reminded me of that, where it was like, this is great because it's resting on the music and the power of the song itself, not trying to win people over with some simplistic, catchy chorus.
Most Alice Cooper constructs will play heavily into whatever that title is going to play into the song as well. And there's usually a strong chorus. It's usually sometimes the strongest parts of the song. But this went a different way. This may be a good time to kind of point out in terms of some kind of real interesting things about this album is that unlike the last several Alice Cooper albums, his touring band, who's a set of fantastic musicians, they're, with the exception of Tommy Hendrickson, they're not appearing much on this album. It's a different set of folks, including Tommy Dinander, who has writing credits for about half of the songs on the first CD of Paranormal. He's got, you know, for Paranormal, he's got co-writing credits along with Roger Glover, also does. And then Bob Ezrin is a heavy presence through most of this album as well, from a writing standpoint.
Yes, and so is Larry Mullen Jr. from U2.
Who can play the drums, my goodness. There have been, so I'm a big fan of Glenn Sobel, who has been doing most of the drumming for Alice as of late. He's always strong. Eric Singer, who, you know, used to split his time between Kiss and Alice, is no slouch either. And so I wasn't exactly sure to say, okay, so the U2 drummer is going to be doing Paranormal. How's that going to work out? It works out pretty freaking awesome. When we get to the next track, his presence is immediately felt. But it is some seriously powerful drumming, some of the strongest drumming that I've seen. And plus, you've got Neil Smith back on a couple of these tracks as well and on the next CD. And Neil's not no slouch either.
Yeah, it was just interesting because they announced, you know, that this was going to have a lot of guest artists on it. And when his name was announced, I just figured he'd be on one track, maybe two. I wasn't expecting 9 of the 10 songs on disc one.
Yeah, I thought he was going to pop in for one or two as well. So that was a bit of a surprise. I was surprised not to see Ryan Roxy, Chuck Garrick, Nia Strauss here. But the crew that did this, they're outstanding as well.
Oh yeah, everyone did an excellent job. We're not saying that. It's just more and I was surprised as well that his typical solo band wasn't really as involved in this album, but everyone who was did an excellent job. And I really have to keep going back to Larry Mullen Jr. in part because I don't know about you, I'm not a U2 fan.
I'm not. And that's why I had a bit of dismay going into this, because it didn't feel like if I was looking for a match, if I was saying, hey, who from what band could we call members to join Alice to kind of take it to the next level? You two would not have been on that short list for me.
No. And in fact, they would have gotten even further from that list for me because of the last album they did, not because they forced everybody to own it, which I know is still a sore point for some people, but just because it was such a poorly constructed piece of music. And it's not that I don't understand that U2 is a talented band, and I even understand the appeal of them and think they have some good songs. I'm just not a fan overall. And that was a really bad record on top of that. So a band that I'm not into coming off of an album that I really disliked, I really thought, especially when I found out he was doing 9 of the 10 songs, my expectations were pretty low, and he more than delivered for me.
Absolutely. And in preparation for the show, one of the things that I fell down on the job on, but Mike did, is that what's very cool is there are a couple, and we'll include some links to these in our blog post to support this. There are some interviews with Alice where he's discusses a lot of these songs. And so kind of throughout, as we go through this, Mike, please be sure to kind of interject if you picked up little tidbits there that would be good for folks to know.
Since you brought it up, something I do have to kind of warn people. Now, this might change because, again, this album is still, it's still brand new. But as of the time that Kelly and I are recording this, there are 10 videos up of commentary on these tracks, but the videos are not of 9 of the songs from the core album, 1 of the classic lineup reunion tracks, and the tracks in the center are not in the same order that they appear on the album. Like the first 2 or 3 are, but the rest of them are kind of mixed up. So I was actually talking about this with Kelly before we started recording and wondering if maybe at some point there was a different sequencing to this album.
And we'll get there, but you know, so a bit of a spoiler is that I would have recommended a slightly different, I love this album, but I would have recommended at least one small change in tail end of this album. I would not have ended with the song that it ends with, but we'll get to that when we get to that.
On disc 2 or this core album?
This core album.
Interesting, because I have a lot to say about the last song of the core album, so I'm looking forward to getting there. So in that regard, before I forget, his one little tidbit that he shared about this song that I thought our listeners would be interested in, apparently, so for anyone who doesn't know, the title Paranormal from the album doesn't necessarily refer to like ghosts or anything dark or ominous like that. He meant paranormal as in not normal or out of the ordinary, because he was trying to make a record that would surprise people and pull from things and use, you know, guest artists and songwriters or co-writers that would bring new elements to the Alice Cooper sound that would surprise longtime listeners. So paranormal in the sense of being out of the normal Alice Cooper record, this song being the one exception to that. The title track Paranormal is actually about a ghost. It's a ghost love story. So you can hear Alice tell the whole, I don't want to just, you know, reiterate his entire story about it. You should definitely go and check the video out.
Which I will be doing maybe after this show, because I'm looking forward to hearing what he has to say.
It was interesting because I, in my listening to this track, didn't necessarily go ghost love story. That wasn't where my head went. So I actually want to go back and listen to the entire album again and kind of take it in with his sort of made some notes on. And I'll touch on those as we go through. But let's jump to the next song. Number 2 on the album, Dead Flies.
A close second for my favorite song on this album. This was I liked Paranormal quite a bit. And then it rolls into Dead Flies, where again, you feel the presence of the drummer immediately. It kicks off with, please watch your step, dear. The world is out to beat you. Don't you know there's cannibals designed to kill and eat you? Delivered full bore Alice snarl. It's got a little bit, slightly bit of a kind of a shout delivery to it that's not 100% typical Alice, but still kind of right in his wheelhouse. And getting into the chorus about infected by the venom of their vicious viral lies. It's all lies. We're dead flies. This song has punch and it is just an amazing song. And I enjoy it tremendously.
So something that Alice said that I think is really going to interest you when you watch the track by track on this that he does, he called this Generation Landslide 2.
Now, as you mentioned that, this thing starts off very much in that same thematic as Generation Landslide. So I totally get that.
And he said that that's where his headspace was. This was him trying to comment on the world around him the same way that he did with Generation Landslide. And he pointed out a line that the first time that I heard it, this was one of the lyrics that really stuck out to me, where I don't remember the exact line because, again, I haven't, you know, lived with this album as long as the other ones, but he makes some sort of a comment about how your phone knows you better than your friends and family do. And I thought that was just a great commentary.
As the folks who have listened to us know, we're huge fans of kind of Alice's lyrical cleverness. This one, these are just pretty strong. They're clever lyrics, but they're also just kind of strong. And it gets into some of this commentary on the current age where you do get mentions of viral lies. You do get mentions of your phone knowing more about you than your daddy or your mother. It talks about the Illuminati and cybernetic voodoo and all kinds of good stuff in here. So it's a rocker. It's just a fantastic song.
Really a great song. And we continue, I think, really strongly going into the next one, Fireball, another great straightforward rock song, a Dennis Dunaway song. What are your thoughts on this one?
So I was very proud of myself after, so I had listened to this. So I kind of listened through this album a couple times, and this particular song, again, I want to go back to my initial, I very much enjoy every song on this album. When I start to order them, unfortunately, Fireballs falls more to the back of the list. There's just other ones like Dead Flies I'm a bigger fan of, and the other ones. But it's not that this is a bad song. I like this song a lot too. But somebody, if you're putting them in order, is going to be near the tail of the line. And unfortunately, it ends up being the two Dennis Dunaway songs that don't light me up. I maybe just love them versus love. And so it's, you know, I want to, again, be clear to say it's not that I dislike this song. The thing that struck me as I listened to it was saying, why am I a notch off of as big a fan of this song, is this would be the best song on a Blue Oyster Cult album. And this to me, this song sounds a lot. If you listen to it, it could fit. It's got a little bit of the vocal, even Alice's vocal delivery is reminiscent of the Blue Oyster Cult delivery, the kind of structure of the song and some of the harmonies. It has a little bit of that feel, not a knockoff, but it's got a little bit of that flavoring. And I came to that conclusion just listening to it before I knew Dennis Dunaway was co-writer on it. And Dennis Dunaway, after the Alice Cooper group broke up, he for a while performed in a group, and matter of fact, still performs in a group that's called Blue Coop, C-O-U-P-E, Blue Coop, which consists of Dennis and the Bruchard brothers, who are from Blue Oyster Cult, the bass player and the drummer of Blue Oyster Cult. And so my hunch is a little bit of that action influenced, you know, Dennis hanging with the Bruchard brothers, brought forward some of that tonality. This is a great song. It is different in tone than most of the rest of Paranormal. Oh, there's a lot of variety on Paranormal. It's a little bit different in tone, and I think that tone is reminiscent of Blue Oyster Cult, and I thought it was particularly interesting in that this would be the best song on a Blue Oyster Cult album, and for me, it's kind of second tier on this Alice album, but it's still very good.
You know, you kind of hit on something really interesting there. I couldn't put my finger on it, but the Blue Oyster Cult reference is dead on. When I was listening to it, there was something that was kind of nagging at me about it, but I just couldn't place it as well as you did. The one thing I will say, what does keep this ordering this album, favorite to least favorite, there is no skips on this for me, but it's not my favorite. It is towards the back half. And honestly, what keeps it down for me isn't even the Blue Oyster Cult thing. Thematically, I don't love it as much as some of the other songs. That's all. Which is, it's a minor quibble.
It's still pretty cool. I mean, it's a cool, kind of a cool story, dreaming about kind of a meteor disaster and then waking up to one. And it's cool, but it doesn't have the same punch that Dead Flies does, for instance.
Yeah, and you know what? I think that's part of the problem, too. If this were sequenced a little bit different, I just feel like we came in with such two really great, strong songs that another really good song is going to pale in comparison to them, even if it's a really good song on its own.
And again, this is him mixing it up. You got two Dennis Dunaway songs on the solo album, and then before we get to the end of this album, you're actually going to have the Alice Cooper band show up on one of these tracks in force. So that's kind of cool as well.
Yes, absolutely. So time to move on, and we already talked about this song, but we should touch on it again for anyone who missed it. Obviously, more briefly, we probably don't want to do a half hour on it in the middle of this episode, but we're up to Paranoiac Personality.
Outside of being nearly impossible to say, I very much enjoy this song.
You know what? For me, and I already kind of spoiled it in the beginning, I really liked this song. We reviewed it as a single. Other than the title, I don't like the title. Minor quibbles with reusing the School's Out bell, only because I hadn't heard anything else off this record yet. And the thing with a lot of bands from this era at the moment is to recycle material from old albums as new songs. So I was worried that that's what was going to happen. It doesn't happen, so there's no concern there, but it just threw me off because I've been tricked so many times in recent years by that. And then on top of that, again, out of the context of the album, I really love the solo on this record, but it didn't really fit the song because it's heavy, heavy fuzz distortion on it. Context of the album, this song plays even better for me, the same way I guess the Paranormal did for you.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And then, and this is the other part that I was completely shocked by. So One of my favorite parts of Paranoid Personality is when you get into the chorus of it, you get this really throaty growl. It's not Alice, someone going, "Parano, Parano." And I was 100% convinced that was Chuck Garrett, because that is when Chuck in the live shows, typically after Alice gets guillotined, they break into I Love the Dead, and Chuck takes center stage and just owns the room for a while singing I Love the Dead and getting the crowd fired up. And he's got this really kind of growly power voice. And the Parano, Parano in there is completely Chuck Garrett, because I'm assuming when they perform this live, Chuck will, of course, nail this part of it. But given the players on this album, that was not Chuck Garrett giving me the Parano in this song. So that was a bit of a surprise.
I was thrown off by that, too, because I also thought that that was Chuck Garrett. So that was one of the main reasons I was surprised when I checked out the track listing.
Yeah, I thought, well, Chuck came in and just did that one then. But no, it wasn't that. And what I did miss, even though we talked at length about this album, and there was the Schools Out Bell reference, there was another sample, not really sample, there's another callback in this album that I forgot to mention when we talked about it last time, and that I wanted to make sure I mentioned this time, which is we get a little bit of the Psycho theme, the stabbing kind of, you know, rah, 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 thing going. They've got that towards the tail end of the album, which I thought was kind of a pretty cool little touch to put into Paranoid Personality.
Absolutely. And it fits. And again, my only real problem with it is that I don't like the title. So moving on, we are at Fallen in Love. What are your thoughts on this one, sir?
So Fallen in Love and Dead Flies are the two songs that are doing battle for me to say which is my favorite song on this album. And it's because in the history of mankind, it has taken till now, and it has taken till Alice, for someone to finally figure out that the appropriate next line to after "I've fallen in love" is "and I can't get up," which I thought was just magical. And so as he goes in here, he goes, and it's just another super powerful song. And he's got like, "I've fallen in love and I can't get up." And I just thought, why has nobody else figured that out before? That's like a really kind of clever point to make. But it took Alice to do it, and I'm glad he did. And I really enjoy the song. Again, it's another one that hammers in. It's a great rocker. It's fun. And this is the one I'd mentioned with callbacks. About the middle of the song, we get, he goes for the gold. In one set of lyrics, he's got, the lyric goes, "I was a billion-dollar baby in a diamond dress." And so we got billion-dollar babies and dirty diamonds. "Now I'm a dirty desperado, and a steaming mess. She'd drive me nervous as a cat on a hot tin roof." So we get a little bit of gutter cats, and "she drives me nervous. Like a dirty cup of poison that I can't refuse." So he's stocked up in four lines of lyrics, about six song references, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have a little correction to something that I talked about earlier that I can throw in because I'm looking at it now. So when I watched the track by track review, I was watching it through a YouTube app, not the official YouTube app. It looks like either it's been corrected or the app did it differently, but it looks like the playlist on the actual YouTube site is in the order that the tracks appear on the album.
Yeah, we'll make sure we include all this stuff in the blog post so you can, you know, hear what Alice had. You obviously want to hear what Mike and I have to say about it, but if you want to kind of get some secondary information and hear what Alice has to say about it, we'll give you some links to find that information as well.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, after our opinion, obviously has the most validity.
Yeah. After
our opinion for Fallen in Love, for my take on that. Again, I actually didn't love the TV commercial reference part of it, but the song is so good that it got me past that. And it's only because I thought it was a little bit too on the nose. And for an album that they're pushing with such a strong web presence, I think some of the younger fans might not get that reference.
No, I get you. I get you on that. I just, it you know, it is so Alice to do that, and just clever and cool. But there is a little bit of on the nose to it, but it's on the nose that nobody else has figured out till now. So props to Alice.
It's true. No, that's true. It's not that I don't think it's clever. It's just a little on the nose with a reference that I think might miss some of the target audience. Since they are pushing so hard on YouTube with this album, I do think some of the YouTube generation might miss the reference. That's all. It's a super minor quibble. So since we are on this song now, are you a ZZ Top guy at all?
So I probably would not depict myself as a ZZ Top guy. I would say that I respect and enjoy what they do. I do think there's a they've kind of staked out a territory of a sound and a structure, and they don't really stray for it. It's a little bit like, to me, like AC/DC, and they're tremendous practitioners of what they've decided to kind of play in, but you don't get the kind of variety that we get with like Alice, for example. But so I wouldn't say I'm a huge fan, but I respect and enjoy a lot of their stuff.
We are really very much on the same page with AC/DC. Yeah, there you go. With ZZ Top. To me, they are very much like AC/DC in the sense that it's a really particular style, a really particular range. Their music is, compared to AC/DC, a little bit more complicated in the guitar area. That's not to put down AC/DC, just to say that the songs are a little more complex structurally. There are ZZ Top songs that are not like singles that I like a lot better than some of their more popular songs. I will say that. Overall, though, I really respect what they do, but not a particularly huge fan. It's a great pairing, though, on this song. It works really well.
Yeah, because this is the one track that Billy plays on, right?
Yes.
So I thought he was going to appear more in this album.
Yeah, so did I. I don't know if you ever saw, so you know how VH1 does it, those shows, and they have like the talking head interviews about every band.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember what the list was for, like what the actual theme of the list was, but ZZ Top was on there and they interviewed Alice, and he said how he made some sort of joke about like how brilliant is it that these guys are all standing around and they came up with this certain, you know, sound that they were going to have, an image and all that, and they were like, and the guy whose last name is Beard is going to be the guy who doesn't have the long beard. I thought was great. And when I heard that it was going to be on this record, that's all I could think of.
Yeah. And the other thing that anytime ZZ Top comes up is when Dire Straits was doing Money for Nothing, they desperately, which was kind of about the MTV generation. And ZZ Top was a practitioner of having some decent high play videos on MTV early on. They really wanted the ZZ Top guitar sound for Money for Nothing. And they approached him saying, hey, can you help us understand, Mark Knopfler saying, hey, can you help me understand how I need to kind of get everything set up so that I can replicate your sound? And they said, no, no, we will not.
So just slight divergence, but it kind of fits with your story. So are you familiar at all with the band Ministry?
I am not.
Ministry is a very successful and very influential band in the industrial music scene. They've been around since, I want to say like early 80s, but they started off as a very, very different band, like literally a different band. Ministry was a synth pop group in the early 80s, and they broke up, and the singer of the band kept the name, entirely new project that was industrial metal based. So if you go back and buy like the first Ministry album and you're a fan of the later stuff, you will be very unpleasantly surprised in the same way that we are with the first two Alice Cooper group albums. Personally, I do like the early Ministry stuff, but I get the people who don't, because that's the way I feel about the first two Alice Cooper group records. Ministry was very, very influential, though, especially on people who are my age group. But there was a point, I'm sure you've heard of Limp Bizkit.
I am familiar with them, yes.
I wouldn't throw around words like familiar. You should just say I've heard of them.
I've heard of them. Yeah. The name's familiar.
the name rings a bell. So at some point, apparently, this story has been recounted numerous times from different people in both camps. But at some point, the singer of Limp Bizkit approached Ministry at a festival or something along those lines, and they wanted to cover one of their songs, or they were covering one of their songs. And in a similar type of thing, he couldn't get the vocal style right. So he was asking him how he set up his mics, how he did, you know, different things. So finally, after approaching him a few times, I'm paraphrasing the story and shortening it, but after approaching him a few times, he agreed to let him come to a studio with him. And he basically just made him do all this ridiculous stuff so he could laugh at him, pretending it was the process of how he got his vocals to sound that way.
Nice.
Which I think is slightly better than just flat out saying no, the way that ZZ Top did to Dire Straits.
A little more fun. same end result, but it'll probably a little more fun way to get there.
Yeah, and actually years later, Limp Bizkit did release a single of a cover of a Ministry song, and it doesn't sound anything like Ministry. So, you know, just in case there was any lingering doubt that maybe he snuck real advice in there, he did not.
And the guitar on Money for Nothing sounds nothing like ZZ Top.
They did
the best they could, but it's like, I still didn't really get it.
It does sound like someone trying to sound like ZZ Top, though.
Yeah, I guess. I'm actually kind of a Dire Straits fan, and so that's always kind of like that song, and I love that story.
And it is a good story. I'm not pro or against Dire Straits. To be honest, I'm not sure how many Dire Straits songs I really know, so I don't think I can really form an opinion on them. I know Money for Nothing, obviously, and I believe there's one other that I was sort of familiar with, but I don't know enough about them to form an opinion one way or the other. That's a cool story, though. All right, so next up we have Dynamite Road. What are your thoughts on that one?
So as I went through prior to hearing the album and looking at, there's a song called Dead Flies and there's a song called Rats, and I said, oh, Dynamite Road, that's, I came into the song with great excitement, and I enjoy this song quite a bit. So there's been some times where sometimes the song doesn't live up to the name, some of the Al stuff. I think this one does. What's not to love? You've got the word perfidy and a reference to Lynyrd Skynyrd in the lyrics, and I love it to death. I figured you'd be all excited about the love it to death callback at the very end. So it's a rolling, rollicking song about a bunch of people in this car. It's basically on the highway to hell, if you will. Again, a very different delivery than a lot of Alice stuff to it. It's driving again, though. This is a rock album, top to bottom, good heavy stuff all the way through this one. And basically doesn't end well for everybody on Dynamite Road, including the car. And that's how Alice's finishes off, where he's like, I can understand why he forced the band to take their final breath, but did he have to trash my Cadillac? Man, I loved that car to death. That's just perfect, nice ending to a really fun song for me.
So first I'm going to go with, I did love the Love It to Death callback, because as we all know, that's the greatest Alice Cooper record ever created and one of the best albums, period, and should be number one on everyone's list of top Alice Cooper records. Right off the bat, I'm typically not a big fan of songs about driving. I don't know if it's because I don't drive. So for anyone who doesn't know, due to insurance issues, I don't drive. So I don't know if it's because I'm not really a driver that I can't appreciate them as much. I personally think it's more because I actually go on tour. So I've spent dozens and dozens and dozens of hours at a time in cars and vans and buses and stuff like that. And it can be terrible. So songs about driving don't necessarily appeal to me. I just think of the bad stuff, like leg cramps because you've been sitting down for 10 hours in a seat. So I'm not really a big fan of driving songs. The one exception would probably be, or have you ever heard the song Black Sunshine from White Zombie?
No, I have not. Is that a Limp Bizkit song?
No, it's a White Zombie song, and you would love it because Iggy Pop is on it.
Oh, I would love it.
He's the guest vocalist on it. It's a great, no pun intended, has a great driving rock song. It is about driving, but it's my favorite song of this subgenre of rock music. And Iggy Pop does vocals on it, so you really can't go wrong. I wouldn't say this is comparable to that. Like, this didn't dethrone that, because that is one of my favorite songs, and Iggy Pop is amazing on that song. But this is pretty close for me. Like, this might win me back to driving songs. This is really good. Listening to Alice's commentary on this, he said that Dynamite Road is a real road in Arizona. I've been to Arizona. To the best of my knowledge, I've never been on Dynamite Road, but I'm going to take his word for it. And then because it had such a cool name, he wanted to work it into a song. And then, of course, the whole thing about, getting run off the road by the devil and all that kind of stuff. Pretty cool storyline, really fun song. And even though it's about a topic I'm not super thrilled about typically in songs, I really enjoyed it.
I was worried, it never neared you. I kept worrying about, okay, are we going to get kind of as the devil's come down to Georgia thing going on here? It's just a little worried on the setup and some things, but it never approaches that territory, thankfully. But it is a good storyline, and it is delivered, in a masterful way by Alice.
So moving right along, we have Private Public Breakdown.
Yeah, Public Private Breakdown, another fantastic song title. This one, in terms of the overall sound of the album, there's diversity in this album anyway. This one, I want to call it a pop song, but it is more in that kind of where, Dynamite Road was, gravel and you're cranking through there. This one's a little more lyrical, a little more melodic. Very, to me, a very enjoyable song. The Secret Service, I make them nervous. That's a fine little set of lyrics there. It builds nicely. And so I think it's really enjoyable. And it is, we have complained on a couple of the recent albums that there was a bit of a sameness thing going on sometimes through it. You don't get that on this album at all. This is one of the examples why not, because this diverges in a nice, pleasant way. It's a very enjoyable song, but it is a much different experience than Dead Flies or Dynamite Road. But I enjoy it.
So Alice, in his commentary for this one, said that when this was brought to him, that it was always going to be a more pop sort of song, like you said, compared to the other tracks on the album. And again, what he was going for, a really diverse sounding record. Not my favorite song on the record, but he said that when it was originally brought to him, because this was written initially by an outside songwriter, and when it was brought to him, it was more of a new wave song. And he said that he liked the song and the concept, but he wanted to rework it as more of a rock song than the way it was presented to him.
I'm glad he made that shift because, you know, if he'd done it kind of straight new wave, you start to go, oh, we're kind of revisiting Flush the Fashion. Because I could see this particular song, new waved up, getting more in that ilk. Not that there's anything wrong with Flush the Fashion, but for this album and what it's doing, I'm glad they took the turn they did because it fits in much, much better.
Yeah, and that was the same thing. It was funny because when he said that, I was like, yeah, I can picture that. Like, that doesn't sound crazy. Because there's one coming up that sounds crazy, the commentary versus the final song. I was like, that doesn't sound crazy. I could see this being more of a Flush the Fashion style new wave song. I think they made the right choice, though. That brings us to Crazy. Holy Water. Sarah, what is your thoughts on this song?
So, you know, in the spirit of diversity, boy, this one, it's not some folks, but it's like, you know, the beginning of this song is kind of like, Some Folks on Coke, just a little bit, where it's got a little bit of the Some Folks vibe to it, but I don't know if you want to call it. It's kind of a Carnival Barker type of thing going, but it's a very, very different sound than anything we've heard so far. And then it starts to kind of pull out of that into some other more kind of lyrical, melodic delivery, big chorus with the old Holy Water, take me down, hold me under, feel the power, fill my soul with righteous thunder. So it's kind of swelling from that. I think we have mentioned somewhere in all of our conversations on Alice that Alice is born again. It's got some very strong Christian beliefs, and he has on occasion altered some of his lyrics to fit better with that belief set. Not much and not very often, but he's sometimes done a little bit of that. There isn't really a lot of Alice stuff that, because it's really intended to be a show and a storyline, that he hasn't really messed with much there. But in my mind, although there's a little bit of stuff on Last Temptation, this is the most direct that he's ever kind of gone, in my opinion, to kind of speaking about faith. I think I may learn something as you fill me in more to see if I've picked up on anything successfully or whether I'm aware.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack on this one, including something that before I get into my thoughts and then what I learned from the commentary, you touched on something really funny, and again going off on a tangent, but this is an interesting thing to me. So Alice is born again. This has happened to other artists before where they you know, got deeper into religion or discovered religion, and that might conflict with some of the things they had done previously. A huge example of that. So I wasn't aware of Alice changing his lyrics on some of the songs or toning them down a little bit. So a huge, huge example of that. Are you a Prince fan at all?
Yeah, I would more than Limp Bizkit. So yes.
Yeah, but for me, you could say that about anyone or just about anyone. There was actually an episode of Social Sins that, you know, just to save us from the dire YouTube censors, I won't say the title of it, but it was, I would rather do something than listen to Limp Bizkit. You guys can go look that up on your own. So I'm a huge, huge Prince fan. Huge Prince fan. I don't love everything he does, but I deeply respect the insane diversity of his catalog, from like stripped down acoustic blues records to ambient instrumental records to like rap and pop oriented stuff to even like a pretty straightforward hard rock record. I really, really respect the diversity of that. And whenever an artist has that long a career and that diverse of a career, you're really not going to love it all, but I respect the process and I respect that he tries it all. Or tried it all, past tense. But somewhere along the line, I'm sure you're aware, if you're at all familiar with Prince, he was not a family-friendly artist for the bulk of his career.
I am familiar with that period of his work.
Yeah, there are numerous song titles that would get you in trouble on YouTube if I repeated them. There's even an album that is titled something that I don't think I could repeat, an actual album title. But when he became born again, he dropped a number of songs from his set list. And he's not one of those artists who would do like greatest hits sets really anyway. He tried to keep it diverse. He would do, you know, the songs that are expected, but would try and keep his set list diverse. But he really, really kind of ran into an issue in the eyes of a lot of fans when he got significantly more religious towards the later part of his life and stopped playing a lot of really popular songs that people expected to hear to kind of come to a certain compromise or find a middle ground. One of those songs worked its way back into the set with really creepy new lyrics. Have you ever heard the song Get Off?
Yeah.
So Get Off, as I don't think I need to explain to anybody, is a very sexual oriented song with some fairly explicit sexual references in the uncensored album version. So when he started performing that live, he changed some of the more explicit sexual lyrics to Bible references, and it was really weird and didn't work in any way. So I don't know how extreme the Alice changes are, but that's what I think of when I hear that.
No, Alice's were always minor. So it was like in Be My Lover, it would be, you know, if you want to be my lover, you better take me home. And then he'd throw in, and marry me, and get me a ring, you know, and do some of that. So that was it. And then the fur teacup referenced in Feed My Frankenstein sometimes gets modified. Those have been the two biggest adjustments.
Modified to what?
Purdy cup is best I can tell. But that comes and goes. But the Be My Lover, the old Buy Me a Ring or Marry Me has kind of ebbed and flowed as well. So it's always been, like I said, very, very minor. Nothing like what you're talking about.
No, yeah, it's unnerving listening to some of the Prince changes. The one that always stuck out in my head, there's a line in Get Off, and I don't remember the exact original line, but it's something to the effect of, we'll try 23 positions in a one-night stand. And he changes that to, we'll read 23 scriptures in a one night stand, which is weird. Yeah. And I hope someone from his church group was like, just stop playing the song.
Yeah, that's probably easier. That's not one you're going to be able to fix.
Yeah, that's not as smooth as you think it is.
I'd like to see how he'd deal with Darling Nikki and modify that. Yeah. To.
I think that was one of the ones that was just dropped.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good call.
Okay, so, all right. Now, getting into this song, about it going into it, again, because the religious stuff kind of hit me right away. We've touched on this before. I'm not a religious person. I am not bothered in any way by anyone else's views. I think you should believe whatever you want, whatever it is that brings you happiness. And what I always say is, like, I don't care if you worship a leprechaun that rides a unicorn. If it makes you happy and keeps you from hurting yourself or anyone else, you're doing better than most people. So that's great for you. As long as it doesn't affect me or impede my life in some way and you're not hurting anybody, you should be able to believe and practice whatever you want. I'm not a big fan of music that is overly political or overly religious, because even if I agree with your views, I don't like them forced down my throat. Music to me is like escape from reality, not a debate on something. It's fine to talk about serious issues and personal things and stuff like that, but when it gets too far into politics and religion, you kind of lose me. I know that Alice is born again. So when the kind of like gossiply sort of vibe of this got started, I was like, I don't think I'm going to like this one. I didn't hate it though, but it got way more interesting to me doing the research to this and hearing how this started. So this is one that was brought in by outside songwriters. This was not an Alice Cooper song. And what they brought him was, it had this sort of gospel vibe to it, but was a rap song. They wanted Alice to rap the lyrics to this, full-on rap song style.
Ooh, boy, I don't know if that's a good idea.
No, that's a terrible, terrible idea. So Alice said that he liked the music and he sort of liked where they were going with some of the concept, because he said in his mind it wasn't so much a gospel song. And this, again, in a way sort of elevates it for me, because it's not a weird religious Prince message. He said he saw this as sort of like Alice leading a New Orleans style funeral with like the loud upbeat music, but there is sort of like this ominous undertone to it. He said, right. So he liked that, 'cause he could kind of foresee where he wanted to go with it. Hated the idea of rapping. He'd not do that and told them right off the bat. He's like, I'm not going to rap the song, according to his thing, but also scrapped the lyrics and told them and made sure they were okay with it, but said, you know, I want to do the song fire and brimstone, like doomsday southern preacher, and say, and so he said the words in sort of more of a preacher tone, or that's how he intended it to be. So I like the song better knowing that, one, it's not a rap song anymore, because that would have been terrible. So I'm really, really glad that was a decision that didn't get made. And also his description of the song eased me a little bit on it, because again, listening to it the first time, I was like, are we getting into some sort of weird religious message and stuff like that? His description of it made me appreciate it a little bit more, and I really respect that he didn't try and become a rapper.
As am I, and I'm trying, and I cannot, gosh, I can't believe I can't pull the name out of it now, because I think the closest that Alice has ever come to rapping was on Welcome to My Nightmare 2. Can't remember, it's the Disco Boogie Fever, but there's another word in that town. I cannot believe it's not coming to me now. That was kind of a Rob Zombie mashup with rap, which was, if Alice is going to do rap-esque type of stuff, you should probably mix in a little Rob Zombie. It'll be all good then, so that'll work out, but I just can't remember. Disco Bloodbath Boogie Fever, I think, might have been the name of it. I feel so bad I can't come up with that right now. but that, he did rap-esque stuff, but again, there was a heavy Rob Zombie influence in there as well, including Rob's guitarist, I believe, plays the solo on that song. So
thanks to the power of the internet, it's Disco Bloodbath Boogie Fever.
Thank you. Gosh, I couldn't. I'm getting old. Can't remember.
And yes, John 5 is a guest on that song.
Good song. Fun one. Looking forward to talk about that when the time comes. But that's the closest Alice has come to rap, and that's close enough, you know, and from there. So I'm glad that happened. Yeah. So this, like I said, those overtones are present. That backstory helps a lot. And particularly, and in some of the recent concerts and some of the costume changes, Alice has sometimes come out as some of this New Orleans shaman kind of quasi-esque preacher, so I could kind of see a little bit of if this song makes it into the live, which I think there's a bunch of songs on here that I would love to hear live. This isn't one of them, probably, but if he does, I think he's got the stage gear for it.
Yeah, still not a favorite of mine, but I like it more knowing, one, it's not a rap song. I respect that, and I respect the songwriters for not just saying, no, you can't use the song, but, you know, working with him and actually collaborating and coming up with something. I respect him for sticking to, you know, his guns on not rapping. And I like a little bit more the backstory of him envisioning it as Alice as like this preacher leading a funeral procession.
Yeah, I do too. I like that a lot. And it's so there's definitely a point of view in the song that's being delivered, but it doesn't feel that you're being preached at or judged. But it is there's a clear articulation of some of a point of view in there. And this is one that, boy, when you look at the contributors of it, there's like about six people involved with this song. So I think obviously some of it was that original crew that brought it into him. So it's a good song. And like I said, that backstory really does help a lot.
It keeps it, because again, when the first, this is, I think, the only one I didn't listen to a second time. Some of them I've listened to multiple times already, but this is the only one that hasn't gotten a replay yet. And part of it was because I felt like if I listen to it more and more and it starts to feel preachy, it's going to become a skip for me. And that backstory really eased a lot of that for me. So we're moving on to the next one, which is Rats.
This is a rollicking little number. Also amongst my top favorites of this album. Bob Ezrin heavily influenced this one. It also features the band playing on this one is the full contingent of surviving Alice Cooper band members. So you've got Neil Smith on the drums, Michael Bruce on guitar, Dennis Dunaway on bass. And it is not a lot to this song outside of rats. There's rats, and they like to multiply. That's what they do. And give rats what they want. If the Alice Cooper group had stayed together, this feels like a song the Alice Cooper group would have produced at some point in time. It's just a fun number in terms of that. It's a great rocker for me. And it's just pedal to the metal, good rock and roll, great guitar. I enjoy this song quite a bit.
I really like it as well. I'm not surprised. I didn't know the remaining Alice Cooper group contributed to this one as well, but I know now, of course, but going into it, I didn't know that. And I thought when it was playing, I was like, this could be an Alice Cooper group song. You know, obviously we were both correct in that, and it is an Alice Cooper group song. Listening to Alice's commentary on it, I should have written down who it was, but one of the people on the record, he kept describing as having a New York attitude and going around in a New York accent, and he really isn't a people person from the way Alice was describing it. And he kept referring to everyone as rats and saying that they were all just rats, all these people. So of course, Alice got in his head, like, this is a great way, great concept for a song, a great sort of hook for a song. So that's where it came from. And I think it's a great song, especially coming after Holy Water, which again, I wasn't super thrilled about. So this was like full on classic Alice Cooper. Great song. One of my favorites on the album.
Has my vote to been the song to finish the album off. We'll talk about what does finish the album off next, because I think it is a powerful little piece of music and it's fun. I'm going to guess, and this is just a guess, that it was Tommy Hendrickson. That's who he, because Tommy's definitely New York. for one thing. And the other thing I've discovered about Tommy, who plays in his live band, and on occasion will wear a t-shirt that says, "I'm no Johnny Depp," which I think is pretty hilarious because Johnny Depp plays guitar with Alice on Hollywood Vampires. And so I think Tommy seems to have a very good sense of humor about a lot of things. So it feels like he could be the rat guy.
that you say it, I believe that it was him, but everyone can fact check me on this and go and watch Alice's commentary videos.
And the other fun little tidbit on Tommy, and I didn't realize this until recently, when Alice introduces him in concert, whatever town they're in is Tommy's hometown. So when I saw him in Peoria, he goes, "And from Peoria, Illinois, Tommy Anderson." And when I watched the recent video of the Austin concert, "From Austin." And so if you see them play, you're going to get all excited because you're going to think Tommy's from your hometown. But I don't think, unless you're from New York, I don't think he's from your hometown.
The world is his hometown.
That's right.
All right. So you kind of already, we've hinted at it a few times, and we're finally here. The actual closing track on Paranormal, The Sound of A. I have a lot to say about this, just like I had a lot to say about Holy Water. Let me hear your thoughts on this one, sir.
So again, pre any insights into who had the writing credits and who's on the performing or any of this backstory as I listened through it, the two, again, I like every song on this album quite a bit. This is a great album. If I have to start to put songs in order, things like Rats and Dead Flies and Paranoid Personality and Paranormal are going to move towards the top. And what that eventually means is some of the other ones move down, including this one, which is, this is not a bad song. This is, again, from a diversity standpoint, different. When I first listened to it, I felt it was reminiscent, had almost a Pink Floyd vibe to it. And then upon kind of subsequent listening, I started to go, maybe Pink Floyd plus Blue Oyster Cult again. And again, that makes sense when this is the other Dennis Dunaway song. I like the song. It is a different kind of mojo, certainly following Rats, you know, which is pretty straightforward rocker. This has got a lot of different things going on with it. Like I said, it's almost got a Pink Floyd feel to it. It's got a little bit of Blue Oyster Cult in it. Like I said, I like the song. I like a lot of the other songs on this album much more.
So I'm pretty much with you on this. Again, I did not pick up the Blue Oyster Cult thing, but I get that. So the first time that I listened through the album, loved Rats. Album could end it right there. That I dislike this song, because again, there really isn't a dislike for me. The closest thing would be Holy Water, but it's still not a skip for me. I wasn't crazy about it. And part of the reason was, this was the first song on the record that kind of felt a little bit derivative to me, and it was of Pink Floyd. When I was listening to it, Pink Floyd was the first thing that popped into my head. And then the more that I listened to it, and it's for this record is a longer song. It's like 4 or 5 minutes. Most of the songs on this album are like 2 to 3 minutes long. They're pretty straight to the point rock song. So it's one of the longer tracks on the record, not the longest, but one of the longer ones. Pink Floyd, though, immediately popped to mind with this. Then I started thinking about it, and I was like, you know what it really sounds like? It sounds like something that could have been on one of the first two Alice Cooper Group records, but way better. Like something that would have been written for those records when they were trying to be more psychedelic, but just with the musicianship of Alice now. So then I watched the commentary track.
Good. Enlighten me.
Turns out, so he says that he was in the studio and Dennis came to him and started playing this song. And he said, "Do you remember this song?" And he's like, "Yeah, this was an old Alice Cooper Group song." And he's like, "Let's work that song and let's take an old unreleased Alice Cooper Group song and make it a new song." And then Dennis Dunaway actually pointed out that it's not just an old Alice Cooper Group song. It's the first song that Alice himself wrote.
Oh, wow.
So this song was actually written in 1967. And this was from the band's psychedelic period. So this was originally intended. They originally started working this song as one of this psychedelic version of the Alice Cooper Group songs written by Alice. And it just got shelved for whatever reason. And now they've reworked it on Dennis Dunaway, dug it back up while they were working on this record. And they reworked it, obviously fixing it up a lot. And they said they made a lot of changes to it, but that's where it originated as, was a psychedelic era Alice Cooper Group song.
That makes a lot of sense because it was like early Alice Cooper Group. They may have had some Pink Floyd-esque aspirations and were still honing their craft from an execution standpoint. So, but yeah, I mean, you feel the Floyd feel in it, and then it's the psychedelic vibe, and you go back to those first couple albums, and that's certainly what we're talking about. So that's really cool. That makes a whole lot of sense to me now.
Yeah, absolutely. It's actually really cool to kind of hear an original Alice Cooper Group song that we've never heard before. And listening to it completely makes sense. If it originated during that period of the band, then it makes perfect sense that it has this sort of Floyd influence, psychedelic-ish sound to it. That makes complete sense. And Alice said he was excited to include it because not only was it an unused Alice Cooper Group song, but he had actually forgotten. And Dennis Dunaway reminded him that it was the first one that Alice actually wrote.
That's the kind of special insight you can get hearing us repeat from other things we've heard here on our reviews.
Only here can you hear someone say what someone else said before.
So remember that.
So it actually, that really elevated the song, just like listening. The two tracks that really benefited the most for me listening to the commentary tracks were Holy Water, because I like where Alice was coming from with it, and it adds a lot to the song for me. And I really respect that he didn't try and rap. And this song, because it gives it a really cool kind of backstory of this lost Alice Cooper song.
Excellent.
So we are not, for anyone who knows my perfect ranking and Kelly's slightly flawed rankings of the Alice Cooper Group records, we are going to rank this album, but not today. We're going to rank it when it comes in order. We just wanted, like we said, we wanted to jump on this while it was still fresh, while it was still brand new. So we are not going to rank this album today. But I will say, sir, we are done disc one. We are done the core album before we start the bonus disc. All takeaway from this, now that we've talked out all the songs, how are you feeling about it?
I came in really liking this album. I came in liking it even a little bit more, getting some of the backstory of it. I'm gonna have to reflect when I look at my list, but while I have a recent vintage, everything that Alice has been putting out, I've truly enjoyed quite a bit. This one is at another level for me, so this one's gonna, it's not going to. Oh, and by the way, you can say it as often as you like. It doesn't make it true. So in my ranking list, I don't think this is going to unseat either of our number ones. But I do think that there's a potential that this one occupies a higher position in the list. I think it could be. So I think this is a very, very strong album. And I think he's been doing solid stuff for a while now. And this is just a level up for me. And so I'm a huge fan of this album.
Absolutely the same. And I've really liked the more recent Alice Cooper albums as well. I think it's really, really strong material. Like the back end of his catalog so far, like these later Alice Cooper years, are just so consistent and so strong. And this is one of the strongest of his career, let alone just the back catalog part. Like this is one of my favorite Alice solo records. I'm not saying it's not at the top. It's not going to unseat any of those. You know, this doesn't touch Love It to Death, Billion Dollar Babies, From the Inside. Like those are all safe, but man, this is going to be high for me. And especially when you take, you know, 20 whatever albums he's in at this point, like this is going to be really high on the list for me, even just based on this first disc, not to mention everything that's still to come. This is going to be really high. And there's no skips like that. That's the best part, especially these days, to get an album when everybody's just thinking about singles. And then the album is really just padded out with an extra couple songs after you release 6 or 7 singles to YouTube. Like there's no skips on this. And the two songs that I didn't love were helped tremendously by the backstories of the songs. So I'm so glad that those videos are out there because it added so much. It really put Holy Water into a different perspective that I liked a lot more. And the backstory of Sound of A being this lost Alice Cooper song and the first one that he ever wrote, that's really cool. And it gave me a really deeper appreciation for the song. So it's actually going to be tough to rank this when we get to it.
Yeah. And what we'll do is we are going to, just because, although this was not a short show, but we had a lot to talk about. We decided, rather than kind of hammer you with a super long episode, we break this into two parts. I think my hunch is our second go round on the second disc will be shorter, not because it's significantly flawed, but there's just a little less to talk about because it's a live album for most of it. There's two tracks with the original Alice Cooper Group, but we will review them separately, but we will rank them collectively. So Paranormal won't rank them as two individual releases. They're part of one thing. So we will do that ranking, but we will wait till we finish all the other Alice Cooper albums prior to placing this on our list. But I do think it'll be high. However, you know, because I know you'd all be dying to hear, or do we, I guess, let me pause there for a second. Do we want to kind of save the Pat Boone assignment till we go through the second part of this album? And then pick one from either of the CDs as the Pat Boone song, or do we want to pick one from each disc?
Oh, that's a good point. I mean, I know what my Pat Boone song is, and it's on disc one. So
let's why don't you keep that, and we'll get one. And we, after we complete our review of the second one, we'll just kind of give the Pat Boone one for it, because you may change your mind as you reflect a little bit on a few of the choices that are on the next disc, but maybe not.
True.
So we'll give you the Pat Boone selection after the next review, and then of course when we kind of do a little mini show to actually place it in the rankings, we'll do a callback to remind you who the winners were for that treasure. Excellent. Well, that was fun. I just couldn't wait to talk about this. And I think if you've listened to us at all, you know Mike and I are huge Alice Cooper fans. I know some of us have had disagreements on YouTube in the comment sections around some of our assessments. You know, what you can't deny is that Mike and I are big fans. And this one is such good work, in my opinion. I couldn't wait to talk about it and have some people listen to this and give us their reactions.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear what you guys think about this album. So make sure you're hitting the comments and let us know what you thought. Even give us your like track by track breakdown if you want.
Yeah, favorite. If there's a favorite song, if you've got some other things on here you want to kind of suggest a little bit differently or other insights, would love to hear it. That's been one of the nice things. It's not explosive yet, but we continue to get very nice views on these videos, and the comments are picking up, many of which are constructive and helpful and a good debate, a few of which are less so. And so hopefully you can throw us a comment whether you agree or disagree with us. Would love to interact with you on a topic I think we're all pretty passionate about.
Yeah, and thank you guys for listening, and make sure you check out part two.
Thanks, everybody.
And there's a lot of Scooby-Doo porn in general that I didn't know existed until the last couple weeks.
You must be so proud.
I'm just proud of myself that I got through my entire recommendation without using any objectionable language.
Okay. Or be cool like Alice Cooper, do coke.